I am fantasy author Elle Penelope, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes at an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 25 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. This is a bonus episode. It features a reading that I did at the Charm City Spec Reading Series, which is Baltimore's speculative fiction reading series. And I read from the new material in the special edition of Song of Blood and Stone. So without any further ado, here is my reading. Enjoy.
Thank you guys so much. Song of Blood and Stone is my first book. The paperback version came out yesterday, and this is actually a special edition. So it is about 44,000 words longer than the hardcover was. They asked me to do an expanded edition for the paperback, and that's what I'm going to be reading from tonight. It has a new storyline woven in to the one from the hardcover version. So I'm going to start with something from the new storyline, and it introduces a character named Ella, who is an immigrant to the country of Alcira, where this all takes place. And this is an epic fantasy in an alternate 1920s type of world. And Ella is a hairdresser, and she has been contacted by her sister, her estranged sister, to come out across the country at her peril, since she's an immigrant and she's not technically supposed to travel. And her sister ends up dying in childbirth. And her last words are, there's two things she does on her deathbed. Her sister does a blood spell on the new baby and makes Ella promise to keep the baby away from a woman named Selene Nidos. So we pick up what I'm going to read when Ella is traveling back across the country to her home. Unlike her relatively speedy arrival in Sora, the trip back was taking many hours longer. She hadn't been booked on the express bus, but the local, which seemed to stop at every village and hamlet on the way back to the capital. Ella held her head in her hands as the bus slowed yet again. Out the window, a large town took shape. The streets were empty. It must have been quite late at night, but a handful of travelers stood waiting outside the bus depot. A constable was among their number, gold buttons glinting in contrast to his blue uniform. Ella's breath caught, and she shrank down in her seat. The newcomers clambered aboard, sinking out empty seats. Ella was grateful for the gently snoring soldier beside her. The constable meandered down the aisle, having a look at every passenger. Ella squeezed her eyes shut, feigning sleep, hoping the footsteps would pass her by quickly. In the gloom, he would not be able to see any of the little differences that marked her as foreign. Eyes a shade of brown unknown to Alcirans, forehead a bit too broad. The man's steps slowed near her, and she held her body rigid. Then he moved on toward the back of the bus, and she let out a breath. She didn't open her eyes again until the driver called out, "Arriving in Rosera, final destination. Last stops, north side, port side." She clutched her carpet bag to her chest and watched the city approach. The bright lights were a beacon, and even the enormity of the sleeping ocean beyond was a comfort. Most of the passengers, including the constable, got off in north side. The remaining minutes of her journey were spent, as most of it had been, wondering how she would find more information out about the High Priestess, Selene Nidos. Could she go to the press? The local portside paper might be interested, but would the larger rags care about an immigrant's accusations of kidnapping against one of the most powerful people in the country? And was it even kidnapping? Should she consult a lawyer? How would she pay for it? Her worries accompanied her to the final stop. The clock on the front of the depot read 3:15 in the morning. Ella yawned and stretched as the soldier beside her rose. She stepped off the bus back to the familiar soundtrack of Portside, welcome after her time in the quiet countryside. Even at this time of night, the streets were alive. A tavern across the way was kicking out its final patrons. Urchins, fishermen, sailors, factory workers, women of the night, and more filled the streets. She could blend in again, a foreigner in a place that accepted, if not welcomed, them. If she were to fail, how would her nephew fare in the care of the sisterhood? Would his shock of white blonde hair darken as he grew older? And who could his father have been to provide such a strange feature? And why did her sister believe her baby was in danger from Selene Nidos? Ella turned toward home when her path was blocked by a wide figure. "Mistress Revel?" The deep voice was resonant. The man was dressed as a driver, black coat and Bill's cap on his head. His long, dour face resembled that of an undertaker. Ella took a step back. "Who's asking?" she responded cautiously. "Your presence is requested by the High Priestess at the Southern Temple." Her jaw dropped. She had expected for it to take days or weeks of agitation to get a meeting with the High Priestess. A summons in the middle of the night was alarming. I don't have any papers to travel outside the gate. Though she'd just been across the country without papers, it was a far greater risk to set foot the few blocks away from Portside where the temple was located. That will not be a problem. The driver motioned toward the town car. The guards do not stop the High Priestess's vehicle. Still nervous, but eager to meet this woman face to face, Ella squared her shoulders and followed the man. He held the back door open like she was an honored guest and helped her inside, then drove the short distance to the temple. The guards at the gate did not even look twice at the car as it passed. The southern temple was a grand structure, much the same on the outside as the smaller temple she'd just left, just on a larger scale. Its gold-domed roof was visible from blocks away, and deep shadows darkened the space between the many columns out front. The driver pulled around the back into a narrow alleyway and let Ella out. Then he got back into the car and drove away without another word. There was only one door near her, which was fortunately answered quickly when she knocked. A young acolyte, perhaps only 9 years old, curtsied and led the way inside. Sweet saints, did they force children to work all night here? The hallways seemed to close in on her. They were dark and cold. The girl led her up a flight of steps, and then another and another. Were they to meet in the attic? Finally, the girl pushed open a door on the landing and led Ella to a balcony that overlooked the sanctuary below. From this vantage point, you could observe the hundreds of people sleeping on the floor, small as insects due to the distance. Each level beneath them featured a balcony with carvings decorating the railings, images of strange creatures that Ella couldn't name, beautiful cities full of spires and needle-like buildings reaching high into the sky, people flying through the air on gusts of wind, plenteous crops and celebrations that reminded her of the ones she'd had back home. The acolyte had faded back into the shadows after bidding Ella to wait, and wait she did. There was no chair in sight, so she was forced to stand or sit on the polished wood floor. After sitting for so long on the bus, she really didn't mind standing, but her nerves grew more frenzied with each passing minute. She studied the carvings and the people below until staring so far down became disorienting. A wave of exhaustion hit her, and she yawned. Her sleep on the bus had been fitful, and grief made her ache. "So sorry to keep you waiting," Ella spun around. Standing before her, having crept up silently, was a woman strung like a bow ready to snap. Her lean face was deeply lined. Silver hair shot through with hints of its former deep red, most distinctively at the temples, and pulled into the most severe topknot Ella had ever seen. A hawkish gaze tracked Ella as she approached. "High Priestess?" The woman bowed, and Ella dipped into a curtsy, smooth and graceful after hours of practice in her university deportment class. "Is it Mistress Farmerfield or Mistress Revelle? I wasn't certain." Her voice was silvery, shot through with music and an edge of iron. "Women do not take their husbands' names in Yali, so Mistress Farmerfield is fine." She paused. "How should I address you?" This seemed to please the woman, if a twitch of the eyebrow could be counted as pleasure. "Your Excellency is most common, though unnecessary as you are not a believer." The predatory gleam in her eye left Ella feeling hollow. "I'm very sorry for the loss of your sister. Kess was a valuable asset to our cause, a dream-touched woman with endless compassion and empathy. We are bereft." Her words felt sincere, and Ella began to tear up. "Thank you." She couldn't bring herself to call the woman Your Excellency. Selene Nidos smiled brittily. She moved to the railing and peered below. "So many souls seeking guidance. It is wise they should do so. To take a journey without having the proper direction is folly, don't you think?" Though the priestess still looked down, Ella could feel her sharp perusal. She suspected Selene had eyes in the back of her head. "Getting lost can be part of the fun," she countered. "You never know where it might lead you." "I suppose you are an expert. I understand you're a hairdresser now, but your employment history has been colorful." Ella was on her sixth job in as many years, but how did the High Priestess know that? And why does she care to check up on her? She carved a smile onto her face by sheer force of will, feeling exposed under the woman's scrutiny. "I've been exploring various options. Not everyone is as fortunate as yourself to find your true calling." "Indeed," Selene sniffed, then turned abruptly, her robe billowing. "Come with me, so we may speak privately." As far as Ella could see, they were already alone, but she followed the woman back down the steps all the way to the ground floor. Instead of discreetly circling the sanctuary and its worshippers, Selene set a path directly through them. Though soft snores and heavy breathing indicated many were asleep, a great deal were awake and stood to pay homage to their high priestess. She held out her hand to accept kisses and waved magnanimously at those too far away to touch. Though the praise was silent, many were awakened, perhaps by the change of energy in the room. Ella followed behind, wondering if her lack of similar reverence for the priestess was construed as rude or inappropriate. Selene was obviously beloved by the people. Those she interacted with were left awestruck. Some even cried. Finally, they'd crossed the room. Selene pushed open an elaborately carved mahogany door leading to her office. The interior was shocking. Ella had come to think of the sisterhood as valuing simplicity and humility, but the high priestess's office space was luxurious. Detailed tapestries graced the walls, fringed with gold or silver. Leather chairs, thick, finely woven carpeting, shelves full of artifacts and sculptures. And in the center of it all, a gleaming wooden desk with gold-painted inlays. Selene sat behind it and bid Ella to sit in the straight-backed chair with the embroidered cushion facing her. The high priestess clasped her hands in the desktop, long fingers tipped with sharp-looking nails. When your sister first joined our order, I fast-tracked her citizenship. It is a lengthy and expensive process, one that I understand you are still undergoing. Ella remained silent, not confirming or denying. Selene obviously knew that Ella had been traipsing across the country without the proper papers. Could she have her punished after the fact? Elsir is a land somewhat afraid of change, I'm sorry to say, but I have found that fresh blood in an organization, other ways of thinking and looking at things, can be most beneficial. Her hands were clenched in front of her in a way that looked uncomfortable. I thank you for your obvious care and concern for my sister, Ella said, but I would like to see my nephew. And do you know who the baby's father is? Will he be called to take responsibility for his child? The babe is the child of all of us now, she spread her arms. He will be loved as one of our own, reared in reverence of our beloved queen to become a man that Sister Kes would be proud of. Selene's subtle threats and digs had shaken her, but her sister's last words rang in her head. Where is my nephew? Why can't I see him? He's my blood kin, and I... Blood is a rather inconvenient liquid, is it not? Ella shifted uncomfortably, the memory of Kes's whispered spell coming to mind. I'm sorry? Selene leaned forward. People act as if blood is steel or iron, permanent and unyielding, but it is just a bodily fluid, not dissimilar from that which coats the inside of handkerchiefs or spittoons or privies. A man injects fluid into a woman's womb, and 9 months later you have a creature of mucus and vomit and blood, Ella jerked back. These ties you imagine that bind you to Kes's child, were they not the same ties that allowed you to go 7 years without seeing your own sister, your blood? Ella's mouth opened, but no words came out. And what of your parents? When was the last time you saw them? A small smile played upon Selene's lips as she watched her words take hold. The pain of being sent away by her parents had never quite gone away. At 13, Ella had been effectively dismissed by the people who were supposed to love her, shipped off to boarding school, and never welcomed back home. Her parents no longer worked on the plantation where she'd grown up. She wasn't sure where they were now. They were traveling auditors and difficult to keep up with. She struggled not to let on how much Selene's words affected her, blanking her expression as the woman kept speaking. Kes made provisions for the care of her son if the unthinkable were to happen. It is unspeakably grievous that she journeyed to the world after before her time. Give yourself the space to mourn, and never worry. We take care of our own, Mistress Farmerfield, I assure you. Your nephew will lack for naught. A sour tang filled Ella's mouth, but the knot tangling her tongue finally loosened. But I cannot see him, ever? She croaked out. Selene smoothed her hand across the wood of the desk, brushing away imaginary dust. At this time, so soon after the loss of his mother, we feel it's advantageous for him to be in our exclusive care. It really is for the best. But I don't... Anger and sorrow and fear tripped her up. This was unacceptable, but she had no leverage, no power. Even her voice was daunted in the presence of the High Priestess. I understand that you are grieving, and this is a difficult time. Rest assured, the decision has been made by those with far more influence than you. Nod, if you understand. Ella blinked rapidly. Shame colored her face. She nodded. Not only was Selene holding a baby hostage, she held all the cards. Ella hated feeling so helpless, May I at least see my sister's accommodations? I understand she was not in the East for very long. Are there any personal items of hers that I can collect? Selene's mouth creased in a satisfied smile. This was a woman used to getting her way. Certainly. Though we live very simply, there may not be much to find. I will have our novitiate show you to her dormitory. The High Priestess stood, and Ella did the same. I hope I have alleviated any concerns you may have. Once again, we thank you for your assistance with Kessa's birthing. I share your grief over her passing. May she find serenity in the world after. Ella nodded again, unable to respond. Behind her, the door opened, revealing the young girl. On her way out, Ella looked over her shoulder to find Selene staring sightlessly into the distance, frowning. This is Kessa's? She asked. No one's used it since she left? The narrow bed and footlocker stood in the middle of a row of six on the wall of the dormitory. Six more beds mirrored those on the other side of the room. The girl mumbled in the affirmative, then stepped aside as Ella approached the footlocker, only to open it and find it empty. The sister in the East had indicated that Kess arrived there with nothing more than the clothes on her back, so Ella hoped to find something here, some clue as to who her sister had become, perhaps even a hint as to the father of her child. But there was nothing. No books or journals, not the few letters they'd exchanged years earlier, not even so much as a spare robe or a ribbon to hold her topknot in place. Where are her things? They've been donated to the poor, miss. Ella turned incredulous. Everything? Already? The girl stayed quiet, eyes darting nervously. She tried to bring calm to her voice. It wasn't this child's fault. May I have a few moments alone to remember her? The young acolyte bobbed her head and curtsied before leaving the room. Ella sat heavily on the bed's thin little cushion. Why would they get rid of all of Kess's things so quickly, before her body was even cold? Everything about this situation rubbed her wrong, from Kess's knowledge of blood magic to her dying plea. She sighed and lay down fully, staring up at the cracked ceiling. When she was 8 and Kess 18, mere weeks before leaving for her world travel adventure, Kess had given Ella her roadster bicycle. She was barely tall enough to ride it, and Kess was not a patient teacher. But even through many falls and scrapes, the bicycle was a hint of freedom. Ella had been able to leave the plantation on her own and ride the country roads for hours. It was the kindest thing her sister had ever done for her. She turned on her side, sniffing the pillow, to see if any of Kess's scent remained, but smelled nothing but lingering detergent. This mattress was untenably uncomfortable. Living simply was one thing, but how were the sisters expected to serve the poor without at least a decent night's rest? Something hard and lumpy was digging into her thigh. Ella's palm skated down the mattress. This wasn't just a lump. She rolled out of the bed and crouched down. If she wasn't mistaken, something had been stuffed into the side of the mattress. She tunneled her hand beneath the sheet to expose the stitching. Along the side, it was uniform, except for one that near that one spot where she'd felt something wedged in there. She didn't have a knife with her, so she just ripped open the seam and dug into the stuffing until she pulled out a little wooden figurine about the size of her thumb. It was pale and smooth as porcelain, shaped like a boat with its oars crossed on top. Kess must have put this here, but why had she hidden it, and what did it mean? The door snicked open. Ella bent over as if she was crying. Real tears threatened, but she wouldn't let them fall, not here. After a few moments, she placed the little carving into her pocket and stood, wiping at her cheeks. The girl in the doorway looked ashamed. Ready, miss? She looked over her shoulder nervously, as if she'd been instructed to come back and didn't really want to. Yes, thank you. I'm ready to leave. Selene Nidos may rule one of the country's most powerful institutions and have the ear of princes and aristocrats. She may believe she held the strings, and everyone below her were marionettes moving in her direction. But Ella saw behind the curtain. After that first time as a child riding the roadster bicycle, feeling the wind on her face and the prison of others' expectations far behind her, she'd vowed to remain free. She had escaped the regimented life her parents had prescribed, eluded a dull future, and found love and contentment in a new land. She would not allow the High Priestess or anyone else to pull her strings.
How you wove a new plotline into an existing book? Where did you, as a writer, sit down and how did you decide what to insert? How did you decide where to insert it? And like, how did it affect the story overall?
Yeah, it was extremely difficult. So what I did was I looked for things in the world. So the expanded storyline takes a character that had already been in the book, a very minor character who had a few lines, and Ella is his wife. So it tells their story. And then I went to the themes of the book. I actually ended up pulling in some stuff that was going to be in book three, some of the ideas and plot lines that I found I could seed a little bit earlier. And so I looked at the theme and what was another aspect of the theme that would reinforce the main storyline, that not take away from it, but give you a bigger picture and a bigger view of the world. And I think that's what my editor was looking for. She wanted me to expand the world and show you more aspects of it. So it's a 4-book series, and I had been working on book three, and so I knew where it was going. I took the theme, I took some characters, and I tried to make it so that they were just as interesting as the original storyline, but not too interesting. Like, I was really worried about, like, you like these people more than these people, because now the book has at least 4 POVs, where it was basically 2 POVs before. And this is, you know, maybe a third or fourth of the entire book. So I didn't want to, I hate when, you know, there's certain characters that you follow in a book and you really want to get back to them, and you're kind of bored by other ones. So that was, like, foremost in my mind. And then weaving it together was a lot of looking at the calendar and timelines and where people are, because they do intersect, but not completely. It's more like a parallel storyline where they're crossing paths with the initial storyline, but it's more thematically related. And then as the series goes on, it becomes more evident, like, why that was there. And so it was definitely very difficult, and I wouldn't recommend it. But I feel like I'm a better writer because I did it. And I really like the new storyline that I came up with. I do wish I'd had a little bit more time, but I think it works. My editor thought it worked, so I guess we'll see what people say.
Why is this book set in the place and the time that it is?
The idea of, like, an alternate 1920s world came to me. I was inspired by another book. Maggie Stiefvater has a book called The Scorpio Races, where you're not exactly sure what time period it is. They have cars and telephones, but it's kind of unclear. And after I read that, I was like, that was a really interesting idea to do a fantasy, not in a medieval time period, which seems to be kind of done to death. And I like the idea of having some technology, but not all of our modern technology. And so, yeah, I didn't see it that often. You know, it's not a time period that is overdone. And that was kind of drew me to it. And the main storyline is these two countries that have been at war for 500 years. And one of the peoples has magic and the other people don't. And so the main character, Jasminda, who's always been in the book, is basically biracial. She has magic in a land where magic is hated and feared. And so she has to go on a journey to save her country that she lives in, that she is a citizen of, but that hates her, from this encroaching threat from a despot. And I just thought, in terms of transportation, and it eases the way a little bit to have some level of technology in the book. That's kind of why I chose that.
I was just wondering if you want to talk about the journey that these books have taken, because I know that you had an unusual path to this book, right?
Yeah, so this is actually the third version of this book that's been published. I initially self-published. So Song of Blood and Stone was first self-published in 2015, and I had put the first two books out in the series. And when I was emailed about a year after this book came out, I got an email just through my website from an editor at St. Martin's Press, Monique Patterson. And so she had found the books online and read both of the ones that were out at the time. And initially she contacted me about pitching her new work, my next story. So I pitched her the next thing that I was working on, and she came back to me and she was like, I really loved Song of Blood and Stone, and I think that I could bring it to a wider audience. And would you consider republishing it with us? And so I did that. I had to take the books off the market. I was actually about to publish book three. The day I got the email was I had sent book three to the copy editor. So I had three books ready to go. And so I did a big re-edit for the St. Martin's version, the original hardcover that came out. It's the same story, but you know, she wanted to see certain things, and it was a good edit. I had hired an editor when I self-published, but I really respect Monique, and she's really well-known in the industry. And so we did a big edit for that. So yeah, it's a little bit confusing because the self-published version and the original St. Martin's version, they kept the same. They kept my cover that I had gotten for the self-published version. And so you'll see those two covers, and then they changed the cover for the trade paperback. And so communicating the different versions can be difficult to people. And I, you know, like, what? How is this different than this and than this? But this is the last version of this book that is going to be published. I promise.
My favorite question. What exciting things are you doing now?
So right now, I am working on book four. I did have three written. I didn't ever get to write the fourth one because of all the things that happened with this. So finally getting around to finishing this series. There's also, I'm self-publishing novellas in between the major novels. So there's three novellas that come in between. And I'm starting work on, I have another series. I also write paranormal romance. So there's two books that are out right now, and I'm working on the third book of that. So I'm trying to go back and forth and not drive myself too crazy, but I feel like I've been working on this for a long time, so I needed to do something a little bit different.
All right, big hand for help.
For episode show notes and to learn more about me and my books, go to lpenelope.com. Subscribe to My Imaginary Friends wherever you get your podcasts, and check out the video episodes on YouTube. Please leave a rating and review to help support the show.